I saw, I can just remember my breath catching in my throat, because what I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I had seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground, you know, they were bleeding, they were throwing up, they were, you know, they had, I mean, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. You know, I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos. I can't even describe what I saw.
Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who suffered a traumatic brain injury on January 6th. She was questioned by Republican Congress member Vice Chair Liz Cheney. That does it for today's show and our recap of the first public hearing of the U.S. House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. The committee holds its next hearing Monday morning. We will live stream it at 10 a.m. Eastern at democracynow.org. On Monday on Democracy Now!, we will speak with Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez about his newly updated edition of the landmark book, Harvest of Empire, A History of Latinos in America. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Camille Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astugio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Still Here, a mini-festival of new works in progress. From Friday, June 10th to Saturday, June 18th in Southeast Portland. This mini-festival features artistic works from modern dance to motorcycles, inspired by the lived experiences of 10 artists in residence. Again, that's Still Here, a mini-festival of new works in progress, from Friday, June 10th to Saturday, June 18th in Southeast Portland. More information, including individual event details, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy, and with me is the lovely Althea Billings. How are you, Althea?
Hello, hello. I'm well. Happy to be here with you this morning and with all of our listeners.
Hello, listeners.
Hello, listeners. We got a great show today.
Speaking of listeners, this is the first time that I noticed that little brrr at the end of the song.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants the girl? Brrr? I love that. Woke me up. It's like nuggets, you know, it's like a sophisticated palate Beyonce is. Every time you listen to it, you taste a new note.
Yeah. And that's why we have to play it every week.
Every single week. Mm-hmm. But yes, like I said, this is The Gap here on Cable Community Radio. And we're stoked to be here in mm-hmm. studio speaking with y'all and with each other. Friends of the show know that our program usually consists of two parts. Part one, in which we usually have an interview or a news roundup, and then the second part where we have a community question and open up the phone lines to you, the community.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I should say, what do we do here on The Gap? It's talk radio aimed at bridging the gap, minding the gap, the generational gap, any kind of gap that you can think of. We're minding it, we're bridging it, we're filling it in. And yeah, we got a great show lined up for you today. Do you want to jump into our first half of topics?
Sure, yeah. There is a lot of... also, good job of Democracy Now! That was some grade A radio right there. Mm-hmm. I was in there.
I was engrossed.
I can't believe it's a real... Like, it's a real story. Like, this happened. I'm like, yeah. Right, I remember watching this on television.
Yeah, I was driving in and listening to Democracy Now! And, like, thinking back is like, oh, yeah. Like, I remember the day.
I remember it well. Oh, that was enthralling. Yes, so we are going to be talking a tiny bit about the January 6th hearing. But there is, and on top of this, other news that is happening mm-hmm. Worth talking about. Where shall we start? Defunding disinformation.
Yeah, let's go there.
You like that?
Yeah, I'm into that.
I saw this in an NPR article, and they were talking about this new org that is called Check My Ads. And they are now specifically... let me go back a little bit. What do they do? They basically try to incentivize, people who, advertisers, mm-hmm. On websites, on the internet, to defund from putting their money and their advertisements in content that is racist and filled with hate. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty interesting. It's like, you got to stay innovative. You got to stay on the clock. And I was really interested in this concept, and now specifically they are targeting Fox. Mm-hmm. and they have a whole campaign about it, and I just thought that was very interesting. I wanted to bring it up to the table. This is what they call themselves, Ad Tech's First Watchdog.
Woof, woof.
I like that.
Well, yeah, I was checking this out because you brought it up. They've been successful pulling advertising money away from Steve Bannon, Glenn Beck. There's another guy on here I never heard of, but I'm going to say that count my blessings that I never heard of this guy. But that, you know, I think we're all, you and I are always interested in, like, you know, these creative ways to, you know, take the juice away from these extremist sources and these personalities that promote violence, which we just, you know, everything now is like just connected back to January 6th.
That's really interesting because it's all part of the same thing.
Yeah. And so, yeah, their new campaign is directed at Fox's website and its YouTube channel, and talking about how Tucker Carlson has just everything Tucker Carlson is up to is a problem.
It's a problem.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't.
Yep.
I'm not even sure what to quote from to express that. But I think it's interesting because, you know, the online ad economy is a lot different than, for example, like putting ads in a newspaper or mm-hmm. even getting an ad on a radio station, because you're not necessarily buying from that specific website. There's a lot of middlemen or ad exchanges, and that's, you know, sometimes if you like log into a new computer or you like, I don't know, open up the web browser mm-hmm. that you don't use and you go to like a website and you see some really like off the wall ads, it's like, this doesn't even feel
this
like it should
speak
be
to me.
Like I'm reading, I'm like being smart and reading an article on Vox or something. And it's like some really bizarre ad.
Right.
It's not necessarily like curated by the website that they're on, but that this still is like a revenue source that, you know, can you can, you know, pull the levers of the incentives, you know, and come to these companies that aren't maybe on the list of ones that are showing up at the Proud Boy rallies, for example, not the ones that are, you know, sponsoring the extremist podcast, but, you know, that are still going to be making money off of clicks from people looking for that kind of content.
Yes, and it's like it's profiteering off of this. I don't want to say it because all of this is so like bizarre and sci-fi to me sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And algorithms and like I'm just thinking of like Necromancer and like these books where you're like plugged into a different reality and you can plug out. And I'm always wondering if these are ways of trying to like unplug people from going down the algorithm rabbit hole or something. Mm-hmm. But it's just so bizarre. We've put these things in place in order to create like revenue streams and stuff, right? And it's just so bizarre that people are just making so much money off of like incentivizing like vulnerable people to do like really hideous stuff, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, you have like, and they're like, you know, sitting in like homes and like mansions and stuff, and you've got, it's just like so, I don't know, it's so disgusting. And you know, and I was watching a video, and this is another thing where it got me to think. I'm like, I don't know how I really feel about this whole like check my ads. And it is like an interesting concept, because like they said, like they are calling themselves ad tech's first watchdog, and mm-hmm. that is like I think that there needs to be some sort of like someone at yeah. least looking at this, creating like the data and like the resources to be like, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of it, we also talked about it a little bit last week. When you have these, I just recently watched another video of a black woman being harassed and beaten by cops. And in the middle, there was advertisement for like Sheen and like another, like, I don't know, something that's, I'm like, what is this? And I was so horrified by it. And I was like looking at the comments just to see if anyone commented on it.
Yeah, the mid-rolls on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah. And I kind of want to know, what about that? What about those advertisers? You know, like, because that is disgusting. And if, you know, if these videos are out, then, I mean, like, there's someone there's like, oh, this video is going to get millions of clicks. Let's put our ad in it. It's like, why is this allowed? You know?
And that so much of it is, like, governed by an algorithm.
Sure,
but that, like, there, I mean, we could get really in the weeds on what goes on YouTube, but, like, sometimes like first aid videos that maybe you need in a pinch have mm-hmm. like three ads before you can get to it, for videos I think above 8 minutes they can you can add in mid-roll ads, they call them, where you can add them in every few seconds if you want to. Jeez. Which is wild.
I would like this to get added on their list of on their agenda.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if you're that, so I think what's important to note here is that, so like, for example, Google operates one of these online ad exchanges, and this mm-hmm. this article is talking about that it has rules that state it does not place ads on site that make claims that are demonstrably false or could undermine participation or trust in an electoral or democratic process, but that doesn't mean that they're upholding that. And so it's also, you know, for check my ads.
That,
you know, also going to the advertiser and saying, like, do you know that your ad is on this website? Like, do you know that you're helping fund them as well?
Do you know what your kids are up to?
Yeah. do you know, the kind of websites that you might block, you're actually making money from. So it's going to the exchanges and going to the individual advertisers and saying, like, some of your customers or maybe not even getting any customers, but you're helping to fund these kind of
exchange strike deals.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, and it's all happening like in milliseconds, like instantly.
Yeah, it's really
so
fast.
You log on to a website, it's just so real time.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that's a very interesting effort. It's cool that they've had success so far, and, you know, interested to see how their campaign against Fox News goes. Basically, they're just saying, like, you know, if these online exchanges actually mm-hmm. held to the values that they say, like the ones that I just mentioned, they wouldn't be selling to Fox News. They wouldn't be placing ads there.
This is another thing to be, who's watching the watchdog is what they say.
Right, exactly.
Go down that rabbit hole. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have even. But the, yeah, defund disinformation campaign, it's an interesting thing. I checkmyags.org.
Yeah.
That's where you can learn more about this. Our next subject of convo, if we can.
Do you want to talk about the Facebook thing or do you want to talk about something else?
Oh my goodness. I read that Facebook, oh my goodness.
It's a Guardian article. Facebook fails to detect violent hate speech in global ads again.
Again. I was like, oh, didn't this happen in 2017? I'm like, oh yeah, they're mentioning.
Oh no, they haven't.
It's interesting. The other story we'll talk about also was, these things just come back. That's why you got to keep an eye up.
Yeah.
Keep up. Oh yeah. Facebook has failed once more. What?
Facebook promoting hate speech?
Do you want to set it up? I was shocked.
There was a nonprofit group that basically created 12 test text ads that used dehumanizing hate speech to call for the murder of people belonging to each of Ethiopia's three main ethnic groups, and Facebook was just like, yeah, no, go for it, that's great, publish those, we love that. They didn't actually get published, to be clear, but their quote unquote algorithm that would quote unquote stop quote unquote hate speech did not do that. And especially because it's, for example, they did the same, basically the same sort of text ads were, you know, published widely in Myanmar and related to like ethnic cleansing of the Rohingya. And then same thing, like it's like Facebook and its ads are connected to ethnic violence, and so it was just a test, is like, you know, they're saying that they've got good content moderation. It does not appear that that's the case. I don't know that these weren't exactly covert, right?
They were not. They're saying, it says here in the article, they thought of the worst things that they could say, and quote, that ought to be easiest for Facebook to detect. They weren't coded languages. They weren't dog whistles. They were explicit statements that this type of person is not a human, or these type of people should be starved to death.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, and then like, you know, the Meta, the parent company, is like, that shouldn't have happened. As soon as this comes out, that the number, I was like, hey, did you know that you were just like so cool with these like blatant hate speech things we put in as a test? And they're like, well, we shouldn't have. And apparently they consistently refuse to say how many content moderators it has in countries where English isn't the primary language. And they're like, oh, we definitely have people who speak Amharic checking these out. So, yeah.
English, they're totally other languages in the world,
there's
right?
Totally other languages. No, Which, sure. First of all, hire people to do the content moderation, obviously. Second of all, like, how poisonous is your algorithm, no matter where in the world, that this just, like, goes through with flying colors, you know? And has now, like, demonstrable connection to real-world violence. How do you not care about or invest in that not happening?
Yeah.
But I think some of it must come from it not being English-speaking, you know? And that they have an easier time obscuring their connection to real world hate speech, i.e., January 6th, i.e., Cambridge Analytica, i.e., Brexit, Trump's 2016 election. I think that they find the ability to skirt around it when it's English speaking, their connection and their culpability. But this is just so blatant.
This one definitely hit home for me because we are Habesha from the Amhara tribe. And I'm just like, my mom is always like, yeah, I'm reading. Are you reading what's happening? And I'm like, where are you reading this? And of course, Facebook.
Yeah.
And she's reading it. And, you know, I can't read it. I don't know what it's, you know, I can't read the articles. I can somewhat understand the videos. Mm. But it's like, knowing that this is what she's watching, like completely raw, getting this raw material, mm-hmm. absolutely no editing, no accountability, no responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Or like that it's possible for someone to take advantage, which is because she's telling me things that are like off the wall, and I'm like, well, I don't want to discredit her in any way, God forbid, but I also want to make sure that she's getting like the proper news, because if, like you just said, we know here how news in English has been manipulated to the mm-hmm. point that it's getting people to climb walls and go into Nancy Pelosi's office,
even though there were stairs.
Even though there are stairs. So after it's been quote unquote vetted in mm-hmm. English, in a language that Meta/Facebook understands. So I can't imagine what kind of stuff my mom is being exposed to. Or like, and you know, like you said, folks that English isn't the language in which they consume the news,
mm-hmm.
knowing that Facebook is not moderating this or that they will allow hate speech because of whatever reason, it's like frightening. It's really frightening. And it's not cool because it's like there are people whose English is not their first language, and consuming news in English is very difficult. It's like so difficult that it's like frightening. It's like I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the easiest thing to turn to is something that's like as bombastic as like Fox, for example, or something like that.
Right. And when you're looking at, and especially with like Facebook, because it is, you know, like communicating with friends and family,
sure,
and
yeah.
also consuming the news on that same platform, like we know what these ads have the capacity to instigate, how mm-hmm. they can spread, how they are shared amongst people, and that, I mean, we know what Facebook is doing in English, and they'll say how many, or give us a number at least on how many content moderators, or what some of what their algorithm or the people looking at the ads, how many there are. They won't say how many content moderators they have in non-English speaking countries,
mm-hmm.
Which could mean there's zero. Like, I don't know why they don't want to. My expectations are rock bottom. They have negative content moderators. They have their own people.
Yeah, that's
you know, like that's what I'm thinking. You got one person? Oh, it sounds like they got a big workload. Maybe you should hire a couple more people. But hey, love that, you know, just like this bare bones stuff. But yeah, just how prevalent the use of Facebook is, and how little content moderation they seem inclined to do.
And they've seen what this can do in all over the globe. Mm-hmm. It's like a psyops, I'm telling you. Like the quote here says, when ads calling for genocide in Ethiopia repeatedly get through Facebook's net, even after the issue's flagged with Facebook, there's only one possible conclusion: there's nobody home.
Yeah, yeah. So this has been our bit about ads online.
Oh yeah, there you go. Another little through line there.
Little connection. Do you want to hit this next topic?
Yes. This is, which one are we doing, two or four?
I feel like we do two. I don't know.
Sure, yeah, I like that.
Okay. New season's union busting.
What are you doing, new seasons?
Talk about it. Well, can I also...
They're hiring union busters. That's what they're doing.
They're hiring Trump-aligned union busters. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised by this.
It's for the second time they're doing it also. Sorry, in case we forgot.
Definitely. But I will say that there was a new seasons that opened in Seattle... and they essentially got run out of town by people boycotting them because they wouldn't let their grocery workers unionize. So it's not a new thing.
Can you say what they did again?
They wouldn't let their workers unionize. And the other thing is that
they ran them out of town. So
basically they got boycotted so hard that they closed.
So this happened. So this is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I wonder if history repeats itself.
Maybe so. But I mean, New Seasons is well established here. It's like not really established in Seattle, but the maybe ironic thing about it was I think, like, economics wise they call it like hotel building, where like it was a grocery store next to like three other grocery stores in like very close proximity, which like you know, maybe you're pulling away from some of their customers, but also all of your workers are like parking basically next to each other and everybody else gets to be in a union. So like, what's your problem, you know?
Sheesh. This, oof.
Perhaps they're not their most smart calculation, but let's talk about Portland and Hillsborough, two different worker groups from New Seasons have filed separately for unions. One of them for, yes, getting their union elections going. There is one of them that wants to do a independent organization similar to the Amazon Workers Union in New York. And then there's another one that wants to join UFCW. But that they're happening at the same time is interesting, and that basically New Seasons has hired this lawyer from Ogletree, Deakins, Nash, Smoke, and Stewart, which is a firm that made a name for itself representing right-wing organizations, including the RNC, also hired by Amazon to fight a union campaign among delivery drivers, and hired by Lyft to stop their drivers' unionization efforts, also used to fight unionizing efforts at Donald Trump's Atlantic City Casino in 2016. Yep. So cool.
And they doubled down on RNC's, where is it? Consulting for the RNC in late 2020.
Yep.
Yeah, this is pretty, it's a pretty bad look. It's a pretty not organic, not fresh look. I'm going to do all of the grocery store puns. This is not fresh or that. And I've only got fresh and organic. It's not a good look. It's really bad.
Their quote is the friendliest store.
Oh no, this is not friendly at all. And I like it's like I love how it's always the reasoning of like, no, we're a family. You don't need to union.
No. We're a family. You don't need to make new friends.
But you love me, right? Why would you ever leave?
Right.
No, misery, get out of here.
This is so
ridiculous. I had so many people, I'm glad, I was just going to say, do people know this? That's my like go-to line. It's just like, do people know this? The world needs to know. And here it is. I want the world to know.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's happening on our watch. To our friend, to like, these are the people that were taking care of us in the pandemic when everything was shut down, who was still working.
Right, exactly.
You know? Get out of here.
Yeah, definitely our our hearts go out to the workers that are fighting through this right now. But one of the interesting things, because New Seasons in the Portland area is facing two different types of organizing campaigns, one that's worker organized and one that's led by a larger labor union, basically the rhetoric to fight those two things are pretty different. To argue against, you know, argue quote unquote, suppress a unionizing effort that is, you know, led by a larger union, which UFCW is, they'll try to tell workers that, oh, you don't need some outside guy to come and help us handle our problems here. Come on.
Don't tell anyone what happens at home. This is between family.
Yeah, come on. That's the rhetoric they'll push there. But then at the same time, the worker-led one, the way that they would want the rhetoric they would use there is that, oh, these guys, you know, don't trust your coworkers. They don't have any labor organizing experience. Why would you want them to represent you? You know, like, that doesn't make any sense. Vote no, right? And so it's like they're gonna have to talk out of both sides of their mouth if they are going to try to suppress both of the unions.
Nancy, what are you doing? No good.
Nancy, the CEO, to be clear. My head's a spin with people.
Yeah, this
Nancy.
Is unbelievable. And the video, have you seen that? So there was the effort in, was it 2017?
Uh-huh.
And there's a video that was like, vote no. Was that in 2000? Was this a recent one? Was it in May? But yeah, I believe it was Nancy that was the CEO of New Seasons. That was like, no, don't do this. You don't need to unionize. It's really, considering all of the effort, considering what we've all gone through in the last 3 years, I don't know however long, and all the unionizing efforts that are happening like all around, it's really, I don't know, get with the program.
Yeah. And the Northwest Labor Press highlighted what the
shout out to the Northwest Labor Press,
what, you know, what workers are saying is their motivation, that they're overworked, underappreciated, and concerned about a recent attendance policy that has employees afraid to call out even if they're sick. Which,
during a pandemic, which we're still in,
an endemic pandemic.
Yeah.
If you're sick, why don't you come in here and cough all over the produce, huh? That's what we do at the friendliest store.
That's interesting. That's a standard that the friendliest store that's not organic nor fresh.
No.
It's not
farm to table.
It's not farm
to table. It's right wing law firm to workers in your neighborhood.
Yes, and all of the, that is so, I just don't understand. It boils my blood. If I walk into, well, I wouldn't walk because I can't afford anything there. But if I'm driving next to one of these and I see like a Black Lives Matter poster, or like some sort of pride thing, I'm gonna be very confused, and I'm saying, keep saying that. I want to say, New Seasons, are you okay?
Yeah.
This is just
wondering about, you know, keeping a consistent energy.
Keep that same energy all over the place. It's new liberal stuff, you know, and it's not even, it's a straight up right wing stuff.
Yeah.
Like they've want,
well, and then also that, yeah, whatever you might be buying at New Seasons is now going to line the pockets of this law firm.
Yes, that's what, can you repeat that again, just in case people didn't catch that? How
New Seasons has to pay this law firm. Where do you think they get the money from?
Where do you think they get the money from?
It's by marking up wheat thins $2 over their regular price.
Don't get me started.
I
we could. I'm like fuming here.
I don't think we should. Well, because we're halfway through now. I want to make sure that we could talk about the hearing if we want to and get to our.
Sure.
Are you okay? Right. Should we spend like 5:10 on January 6th?
We can do. We'll give it five and a half.
4.5. All right. So we're moving on. Our blood got too boiled, and now let's have our blood go ice cold, because that's how I felt about these hearings, the first public hearings from the House Select Committee on the January 6th insurrection was last night, prime time. The next one will be on Monday, and I understand you got some audio for us.
I do, yes. This is, and I don't think that they've played this part of the hearing on Democracy Now, so shout out to them not doing that. This is a piece from the rights of a minute, little less under 2 minutes, of the rioters themselves speaking, and it's a video. You can't see it obviously because it's radio. A lot of them are facing pretty rough, or not, like, you know, like there are consequences to these actions. Yeah. You know, it's like I was like, oh, are they just like hanging out at home doing like a Skype interview, and a Zoom interview, and I realized, oh no, they are all like, yeah, there's consequences, and they are. Yes, anyways, here's the video. Oh, sorry, here's the audio.
Now we're going to hear it from the rioters themselves. Without objection, I include in the record a video presentation.
What really made me want to come was the fact that, you know, I had supported Trump all that time. I did believe, you know, that the election was being stolen, and Trump asked us to come.
He personally asked for us to come to D.C. that day, and I thought, for everything he's done for us, if this is the only thing he's going to ask of me, I'll do it.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Did you recall President Trump mentioning going to the Capitol during his speech?
Oh, yeah. So that's one of my disappointments. He said he was going to go with us. That he was going to be there.
I know why I was there, and that's because he called me there, and he laid out what is happening in our government. He laid it out.
But I remember Donald Trump telling people to be there, right? I mean, to support.
So you mentioned that the president asked you. Do you remember a specific message basically, yeah, he asked for us to come to D.C., that big things are going to happen.
What got me interested, he said, I have something very important to say on January 6th or something like that, is what got me interested to be there.
You know, Trump has only asked me for two things. He asked me for my vote, and he asked me to come on January 6th.
Yep, that was from the testimony of the rioters from January 6th. Any thoughts on that, Althea?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a clear pattern established where
there is a clear pattern established. I'm no lawyer. I'm no liar.
I asked and answered, you know. Hey, why did you come? Oh, Trump told you to? Got it. Very understood. Across the board, that is the resounding
across the board, yes,
understanding that, which I'm now just sort of caught up in the thinking of being motivated to do something when a politician asked, I guess, which is an interesting train of thought.
Also
that I can
this,
explore on my own time, I guess.
Like on, wasn't it like on Twitter or something?
So December 19th, he had...
Right.
He was tweeting that everybody come out January 6th. That's going to be wild. And his comments from the presidential debates telling Proud Boys to stand back and stand by.
Right, I remember that. Yeah, there's a...
They're like, all right, it's time. Put the guns in a storeroom in Virginia. Let's get down there. Which is what they did.
Yeah, there's Democracy Now, and it'll be on at 4 again,
if you missed the
coverage. I wanted to play, before we go to a really short break and then to our open phone lines, this is from a correspondent, the CBS News correspondent, congressional correspondent, Scott McFarlane, and he asked a kind of a silly question, but he anyways, I'm gonna play this and then we can talk about it a little bit and move on.
By my count already, Donald Trump's name has been invoked 100 times at this hearing. But the other names we're hearing a lot of, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. Let me open up the Capitol here and show you why. The Proud Boys are accused of being here before Donald Trump spoke that day. This is one of the defendants who's pleaded not guilty. He was just shown in the video footage from the committee, Dominic Pozzola, smashing open the window, leading this mob of rioters in. This is the other side, another vantage point we saw moments ago. The mob followed the Proud Boys. The mob, to a degree, followed the Oath Keepers, too. These are the far-right groups that are clearly of interest to this committee. They've been unequivocal about it. The mob succeeded that day because of its size. By orders of magnitude, they were able to coordinate and outnumber police. One more image I want to show you as I pull up this still image of the accused Oath Keepers. This group, Nora, is charged with seditious conspiracy. This is a military stack they're accused of using to breach the police line. The committee has made clear tonight, already, nearly a dozen times, they're interested in the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, and what gave rise to this.
What gave rise to this, Scott wants to know. I'll say, Scott, I'm not holding you personally responsible, God forbid, but the general reporting on all of this, the like just disregarding the rise in white supremacy and not reporting about it. What do you mean, Scott? Are you okay? What's going on? Nancy and Scott need to go hang out together, maybe get their facials and get their mind cleared, you know, get their sinuses fixed or something.
Yeah.
What gave rise to this? You not reporting about it? What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. It is unsurprising. I'm waiting for the other shoe of the congressional and administrative cooperation that egged them on, you know, because what we've heard so far is like, oh, we saw this tweet, we heard this thing, we knew what that meant, which is for these extremist groups that makes sense. But to me, and from what I've heard that they've found out so far, there was efforts to understand and coordinate with certain folks inside the U.S. government to make sure that was like gonna be cool, you know, preemptive pardons were discussed, right? All of that kind of thing. And you know, wanting to, like, Trump was agreeing with the chant, hang Mike Pence. That was in Democracy Now! Today. Yeah. Like, that's...
He said, like, why not or something.
Well, if he doesn't do... I'm not going to do the impression.
And you remember...
In 20 years, maybe I'll do the impression.
Was it on January 6th that... Or, I'm sorry, I might be missing the date. Mm. Where in Oregon, there was, like, a...
No, ours was in December.
Before it went mainstream.
Yeah, I remember that guy that let them in. I was thinking about him today.
I was thinking about him because there's... thinking about the elected official who let a bunch of white supremacists
armed white supremacists
go into an Oregon.
Well, you can't come in the front door, but the side door. I did open it and let you in.
And video.
Allegedly.
On video.
That's how you interpret this so-called video, which can we even trust video?
Oh, my goodness.
He was a real pill about it when he got ousted for that.
What was his name? Why did I forget his name?
I forget. Let him be lost to time, I say.
I wanted to make sure that he's held accountable so that we remember that this is elected officials.
I'll look it up on the break.
What gave rise to this? Scott. Scott, come on now. So this is where we're at.
Representative Mike Nierman. So let's take a break.
I don't want him to live this down.
Let's maybe take our break and come back for our question.
Yes.
I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, no, yes.
I'm looking
no.
at the time.
Thank you. Okay. We'll be opening up the phone lines in just a second for a community question. You're listening to The Gap on KBOO. Here's a short musical break. Are back here on The Gap, KBOO Portland. We're going to open up the phone lines right about now for our community question. Althea, would you like to set it up?
Yes. I wanted to talk about self-help books. There's a lot of them out there.
Bing bong.
Not all of them are good. So I want to know, have you ever read a self-help book that you actually took something away from or put it into practice in your life? Is there a self-help adage from a book or I guess from a podcast or whatever you got, we'd be really interested to hear what that is. So please do give us a call, 503-231-8187. What is the best advice you've gotten from a book? Are there, you know, some things that haven't worked out? We're really interested to hear. 503-231-8187.
And it can be any book, really. Or does it have to be specifically a self-help
book? No, it can
book?
Be any book, I guess.
I tell ya. What I want to hear your book.
Well, yeah, because I was thinking about this because I'm reading right now All About Love, New Visions by Bell Hooks. And in the book, it's mentioned, you know, like, read all of these self-help books and they never define love.
Mm.
And that, like, they act like it's a silly idea to even want to try, right? And that, like, how much good or how much help do self-help books really offer out there? And I was trying to think about it. But the one that I read when I was probably, like, 12 or 13, I think my mom got it at a thrift store, was Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Teens. And I actually read that, like, cover to cover multiple times, and I think it actually did help me. I was, if you can imagine me as an anxious and sort of high-strung 12 and 13-year-old, because I'm so cool and chilled out now, it actually was like helpful to read at that point in time to just kind of have that level set on a number of different topics of just like, hey, you know, you don't need to freak out every time your sister says something a little snide. That was helpful to me. I think it did help.
And that was
don't smell the small stuff either.
Don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, that was
be a nice book cool. Recommendations. I like
well,
this.
Well, I'm not telling anybody what to do. I've only read the teen version, and it would have been 10 years ago. So,
We do have a caller on the line with us. Edie, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you. Before I moved into my teeny apartment, I got rid of over 6,000 books, most of which were about parenting, communication, and self-help. And the one that trumps them all is pretty easy and rewarding at all levels, no matter who you're dealing with. And that's Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. If we look at the actual motivation for everyone's behavior, and we can find the actual, you know, best solution for us, it comes through looking at the strategies that the mindset that nonviolent communication by Marshall Rosenberg says. And my need for safety and for community and for help and hope is that we all get together tomorrow morning to support the kids and march for our lives, keep them safe, keep them successful. Starting at 11 a.m. at PSU, Urban Plaza, Southwest 5th and 6th, and Mill. Thank you.
Thanks, Edie.
And give money to KABU, because we've been encouraging people to do the independent investigation, and it's our local small independent news and Rose City Antifa who have been looking at the actual photographs and travel plans of folks that resulted in them getting some of the convictions we would have probably never had otherwise. So give money to KABU, show up tomorrow morning, read Nonviolent Communication.
Thank you, Edie.
Appreciate
short and
you.
Sweet. I love that. I love all of that. Nonviolent communication.
Yeah. I just pulled it up and I'm reading the synopsis. if other folks want to call in, we're talking about self-help books or advice that you got from a book that actually helped out. 503-231-8187 is that number.
And
let us know what you think.
We do have Arthur on the line. Arthur, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
You're coming in clear. Good morning. You're on the air with us.
Well, thank you. One of my favorite self-help books that I read, hopefully rarely, is called One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich.
Oh, I love
One
that.
Day, yeah, in the Life. It's by a Russian named Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And it's about this man's multiple years locked up in a Russian forced labor camp. And whenever I feel like whining and complaining about my life, you know, which a lot of people have troubled lives, I just read this book and read about his troubles and his survival strategy in that forced labor camp. And it puts all my troubles in perspective. And so in that way, it's one of my favorite self-help books. And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm Googling them all as you guys bring them up. So this is all very interesting.
Can we have them on the website afterwards?
Sure, I can link you a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I love that.
Happy to. If other folks want to call in and talk to us, we're talking self-help books, advice that you've gotten from books, stuff that actually helped out. Give us a call, 503-231-8187.
I love this. I love books. I love this. I want
to
share the book that...
Yeah, please. I was about
to
ask.
There is the book that... And it's not a self-help book. And it might be a little corny, but Johnny's Got His Gun.
Hmm.
Are you familiar with that one? It's the one that Metallica did that song about.
I know the song.
Yeah. It's about a soldier. And it's an anti-war book, and it's about a soldier who lost his limbs, his vision, his hearing, I think, and he was mute. But he was still alive, and it was just a book, like the whole book was his thoughts about war and his condition. And he had this one line, and it like I read this when I was a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was about how when people die at war on a battlefield, they don't think of democracy, they think of their mom.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like touched me. We got another phone call, so I'll take that real quick.
Yeah, that is striking, and to hear from, you know, two people thinking about war and imprisonment and, you know, taking those things to heart. If other folks want to call in, please do. 503-231-8187. What self-help books actually played a role?
We have another caller. Joanne, you're on the line with us. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
We can hear you too. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, this is a fun topic. The first time I'm listening to your show as well. So,
welcome.
Yes. So years ago, it would be like 1989. I started driving truck at night, and I started listening to books, and I bought this one called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself by Shad Helmstetter. And basically what we say to ourselves is how we program our brain. And when I speak negatively to myself, I like say I'm terrible at remembering names. I can never remember names. Well, I've taught myself and convinced myself I can't remember names. So what I have to do is reprogram myself and say, I am great at remembering names. I remember everybody's name. I have no problem remembering names. And it actually works quite well. I've used it in other areas of my life with things that are difficult. And rather than saying, oh, I hate that, I say, I love that. Or like as a bicyclist, I always say, hills are my friend.
I love
that's
that.
Good. That's good. I need it. To adopt that. I do not have that mentality when I'm even walking up a hill, I could say.
Thank you, Joanne. Yes. That was beautiful. Yes. I love that.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks for listening.
Right, you too.
I like that. I I'm going to have to adopt that too. And we have another caller on the line. Oh, I want to make sure I did this right. Oh, nope, that's not it. I'll figure this out.
Work on it. Yes, of course. We're talking self-help books. What is one that actually helped you, or a piece of advice from a book? Doesn't have to be a specific self-help book. 503-231-8187. We got 10 minutes left. Would love to hear your thoughts and, you know, see what actually made a difference.
I think I figured it out. Are you with us, Tawasi?
Good morning.
Oh, good there morning. You are. Good morning.
Hey, I first off want to thank you fine folks for doing the work that you do. It really improves my quality of life and the community at large. So thank you.
Thank you.
Second, I just wanted to recommend the book. It's a classic, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That book really helped me to be a better friend. And one of the ways that it helped is that I genuinely listen to people, pay direct attention to them, and am interested in what they have to say. You know, if you're in a conversation with someone and they're just kind of staring off into the distance or looking at their phone or just doing something that's not giving you their attention, you notice that. So, you know, that book, it just helped me to recognize that what people really want is direct attention. They don't want to hear about you. They want you to listen to them. So I appreciate you listening to me, and I always appreciate listening to you. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Too.
Thank you. That was really nice.
I've definitely heard that title before, but I have not checked it out.
It's a good one.
Very cool.
Another one, yeah, that's a really good one. I think I was listening to it in the beginning of the pandemic or something. It's all of a daze to me now.
I mean, yeah, good takeaways of listen to people. It makes a huge difference.
You know, they
being
say
an active listener.
You know what's what everyone's favorite word is?
What?
Their own name.
That's true.
Ew.
I get a little shocked to the system when someone says my name. I'm like, first of all, you know my name. Second of all, you said it right. That's so cool.
I don't like, that's why I don't, when people say like, so there's a thing, when people repeat my name too much when they talk to me, I'm like, I know what you're doing. We got another caller.
You want me to feel a certain way. You want me to feel recognized and known by you. Not gonna work. Other folks want to call in. We're talking self-help books. 503-231-8187 is the number. We'd love to hear your thoughts. What has impacted you? What if you got some bad advice? We hear that too. Do give us a call.
We have Matthew on the line. Matthew can hear us.
I can. You can hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
I'd like to first echo the last caller and say thanks so much for your show. Love it. And personally, the most impactful self-help book I got a couple years ago from my spouse. It's called You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy? And at first I was like, what is this? And then it's about adult ADHD. And it was a life changer for me. Everything was very identifiable personally. And at 41, I got on adult ADD meds, and it's really helped things. So anybody who's struggling with focus, it's one I can't recommend enough.
Very cool. Thank you so much for calling in. I think I recognize the cover. I think someone in my life has had a similar experience with that book. If other callers want to give us your thoughts about self-help books, things that have helped you out, change your perspective, we'd love to hear it. 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187.
And we do have our last caller of the day, and that is Roger Leverett. I hope I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi,
what's
welcome.
Your book? Hello.
Hello. So, yeah, a long time ago, I ran across a book called The Denial of Death by Ernst Becker, who is a Northwest psychologist. And he goes through the stuff I've been wrestling with, which is why all our major religions talk about rebirth and reincarnation in a way that denies the fact that we actually all die. The life after death is a supernatural Ernst Becker says a psychologically destructive force because it denies a central reality and undermines Mother Nature, for one. Anyway, that's my little pitch.
Yeah, interesting. I'm looking at the cover right now.
Appreciate it.
He grew up. He worked in Seattle and was a very instrumental for me in understanding why major religions are destructive in our world, because they are literally supernatural above Mother Nature, which demeans Mother Nature.
Well, thank you for that, Roger. That's definitely a thinker, and we'll have that all up on the website. Really appreciate
it. Hey, love your show.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Oh, that was lovely.
Yeah.
That was a thinker.
Yeah.
I love this. This was a great... I have a whole list of books now.
Yeah. A lot to check out. I'll do my best to link everything that people brought up to our webpage, kbu.fm/thegap. Are there other ones you want to... anything you want to highlight while in our last couple minutes here?
Sure. Another one that I'm trying to think of... right. It's in here. The Body Keeps Score.
Talk to me. I haven't read it.
I learned about that from another book that's called The Trauma Toolkit, which I got from an author that I interviewed for the KBOO Evening News in like 2000 something.
No way.
There you go.
That's
cool.
It's full circle.
It is a full circle. And it's basically about like the body and trauma and how it affects your body and your personality. It was an interesting read, and there's another caller, I think it was Arthur, that was talking about how they were reading the book, and it was just so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh my God, yes, someone understands. So I'm not lazy, stupid, or crazy, you know?
I think that is like the feeling that a self-help book actually get, like when you're like, oh, that's me, and I'm not the only one.
There's
that
a
is
name
this
for
way.
This.
There's a name for it, and there's other people that have. One had the same thoughts and feelings and have these ways to deal with it or reframe thinking about it, and just to give you a little bit of space on it. I think that's very cool, and
yes.
I'm excited to learn more about the books that everybody talked about today.
Being able to name something and it's like it makes it it turns it, I think, from like a shadowy figure to just like, oh, that's just OCD, or like that's just PTSD, or that's, you know, just
sometimes
it
doesn't have like an acronym or whatever,
sure,
but it's just
sure.
Hey, this pattern of thinking that I have is not just me, it is like that other people have thought this too, and here's what they took away from it. You know, no, I don't think any self-help book is the end-all be-all on any topic, and if they purport to be, that might be a problem. But I think that, you know, having getting a different perspective on yourself and on your thinking and your patterns is good stuff, and I'm proud of everybody out there who is taking an interest in themselves and their patterns and looking for different ways to approach stuff.
For sure. And like we mentioned a little bit earlier, you can be inspired to be better, do better, in whether it's through music, books, you mm-hmm. know, like anything really can inspire us to be better and do better. Mm-hmm. It's something about, yeah, like the ability to feel that transformation within you, mm-hmm. or at least to just be like, again, being able to name it. I'm like just so big on just having things, because to me, having a name for something or just being aware that you're not the only one,
yeah,
it turns into like a little, just like, oh, this is this little thing I got to deal with. It's not like this thing that's controlling my life that that I don't understand.
Well, yeah, and even if you didn't call in, I think it's like a nice exercise to even just reflect on it, because I started thinking about it. It's like, well, you know, I haven't read a ton of self-help books mm-hmm. in my life, but actually I do remember this one or this two that like I actually took something away from, and it's cool to think about how I've changed as a result of like putting those things into practice.
This is great.
Yeah.
Just for our last, because we just got about a minute and a half.
Do we have a minute and a half? Okay, my clock is different in here.
Yes, I have Otto's clock.
Okay, you know, you know the real boss's clock. That one we can leave.
Because the theme song is only 30 seconds, and then I get, and then I'm like, oh, scrambling to find music.
Okay.
And it's already just very hot in here. I'm still hot from the first segment.
I'm also warm. I didn't know if it was because it's warm in here, because, I mean, when I drink coffee in the morning, I get kind of warm. It's that time of year again where I shouldn't be drinking hot coffee. I don't know.
Someone
whatever.
Offered me, they said, do you want this iced or, and I'm like, iced coffee in this weather? I'm like, oh, right. It's I'm wearing shorts.
It's like wildly humid.
Wildly humid.
Down, yeah.
Unseasonably cool down, humid, I mean, for the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's not my favorite weather.
I'm not into it.
But anyway, hey, thank you so much for listening to The Gap. I'm Althea. Tammy is also the other host.
Yes, my name is Tammy, and I'm part two.
part
two of two.
Equal.
Cool.
Thank you for listening. kbu.fm/thegap.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Girls, we run this.